We've been talking about the family that Jesus came from. Now, this wasn't just any family. This was a family that God designed for Jesus to come from. And we've been talking about the four main patriarchs in the book of Genesis. So we've been tracing the beginning of the family of Israel. And it's important for us to know this because it's important for us to understand where Jesus came from. Because if we can understand that God's hand was in the creation of the family that Jesus came from, then we can see that his plan for universal reconciliation for the entire world started in Genesis. That this was always part of God's plan. But these people weren't perfect, were they? It's like, your family's not quite perfect. I'm sorry if you think your family's perfect. There's at least one wackadoo in every family, right? It's Laura. Yeah, we know ours. You got four? Wow. Someone want to borrow a wackadoo from her family? So we started the first week, we talked about Abraham and about how God made him a promise. And he would be the father of a great nation. Now, this was a big promise because Abraham was an old man and his wife was an old woman and they did not have any children. But this nation that God said would come from them would be blessed by him and they would serve as being a blessing to all other nations. In the second week, we talked about their son Isaac, the promised child. And how his story is a prophetic reenactment of the story of Jesus. How it kind of foretells what's going to happen with Jesus. And then last week we talked about Jacob. And it took Jacob surrendering to God for him to learn how to be grateful. We talked about the sibling rivalry between him and his brother Esau. They were twins. And the grasping of the heel, the stealing of the birthright. You guys, if you missed any of these messages, you can find them on theproject.church. We don't have time to get into all of the family tree history today to recap it, but it's some really fascinating stuff. We started this series in Genesis chapter 12 with that promise that God gave to Abraham. And we're going to wrap up today in Genesis 50. That's a lot of history to cover in just 4 weeks. There is no way that we can cover it all here. So it's up to you guys to, on your own, dig deeper into the Word, into Genesis, and to kind of figure out some of this stuff, kind of learn this history, and kind of see some of these parallels, because there are things that we just don't have time to talk about here. But it's very fascinating, and it's amazing how Genesis is kind of the foundation of everything else that happens in the biblical story. So has anyone been reading through Genesis as we've been going through this, like on your own, a few of you? It's tricky, isn't it? It's kind of a tricky book to get through. You know, some of these stories took place over 4,000 years ago. That's crazy. That's a long time. People have changed a little bit in that time. And there's so many tricky passages in Genesis that are hard to understand. Like when we talked about Isaac a couple weeks ago, we talked about one of those tricky passages. But we've got to understand that the time and the culture is different. And so we have to kind of put things into context to really kind of understand how the character of God is represented through Genesis. So I can understand how someone could read Genesis and find it hard to see God as being loving and forgiving. Because some of these stories kind of present him as being angry or unmerciful or punishing. But we have to keep a few things in mind as we read through Genesis. So here's a few things to keep in mind. First of all, Genesis is a history of human action. Now, God is present in their stories, but they're the ones that are making the decisions and shaping their culture. They're the ones that are shaping their stories. They have the same free will that we do. But they did not have the opportunity to have the same kind of relationship with God that we do because Jesus had not made that possible yet. So they were some pretty messed up people, right? We're kind of some messed up people sometimes too, though, right? we can't say that if someone looks at the story of our life, that it's a story of Jesus' action. Jesus works through our messes. He does not make them. The second thing to remember is that this all took place before the law was given to Moses. They had never heard of the Ten Commandments. There was no law for them to follow. There was no moral code. They had nothing to regulate their behavior beyond their personal preference. See, we tend to judge them harshly because we are holding them to the moral and ethical standards that we know. But they frankly did not exist at that time. So things like having multiple wives or using your servants to give you more children, those were human inventions. That was human action. That was not necessarily part of God's design for humanity. And the third thing to keep in mind is that God honored his promise despite their decisions or behavior. See, just because they are famous people in the Bible that we talk about thousands and thousands of years after they lived, it does not mean that God approved of all of their actions. If you read closely, you'll see that there's times that God condemned them, that God may not have punished them, but been like, I think you might need to rethink this. Or God, like, sent somebody to talk to them, a prophet, to speak to them. Or if they were really bad, he sent an angel. Ooh. But see, God used their messes that they created for themselves to increase rather than to decrease his mission. Only God can take a messed up situation and messed up people and make everything work out for the good of all in the end. So if we read this complicated book with these three things in mind, it can help us to understand that the character of God is consistent from Genesis to Revelation, just like in the song we just sang. He never changes. So today we're going to be focusing on the story of Joseph. So we've got a graphic here, family tree graphic, that we've kind of been using, we've kind of been building on for the past few weeks to kind of show how this family all lays out. So if we look at this family tree, we see that Jacob is the 11th son of Joseph is the 11th son of Jacob. This is going to be, you're going to have to keep me on track here with the J names. I tend to switch them up. See, we don't have time to get into all the complicated details about Jacob's wives, but in short, this is a very quick lesson here. Jacob wanted to marry Rachel. Rachel was the second daughter. You can't do that in their culture. You have to marry, the oldest daughter has to be married before the second daughter can be married. So he was tricked by the father into marrying Leah. Then, 7 years later, he was also given Rachel as a wife. And then they had some sister-sibling rivalry going on. Y'all, it's crazy stuff. Crazy stuff. And so they used their servants to have more children on their side of the family tree as leverage. Human action, guys. This is not God's design. So out of these four wives and servant wives, we have 12 sons. This is not including the daughters. Big family. So Leah, which was the unloved wife, had her 6 sons. But Rachel was the loved wife. And she had Joseph. Now Benjamin hasn't been born yet. That's a lot of sons. That's a lot of drama between the wives and the manipulation and the using of each other and the rivalry. But see, remember that this was a very different culture and these people were making decisions based on their own benefit. But still, God used this crazy situation and he worked it out for the good. he was able to use it in his plan. So from these four women, Jacob had 12 sons total. These 12 sons became the 12 tribes of Israel. So if you read through the rest of the Old Testament, there's going to be references to the 12 tribes. There's, you know, you might see the name Levi here and be like, oh, Levites, they were the priests. That was the nation of priests. Or you might look at the Benjamin or Joseph or Gad or Asher, and you may recognize these names because these were the tribes that created this great nation. So look at this, because this kind of just blows my mind. So you have Abraham up here. Abraham and Sarah, old, unable to have children, past their prime. They'd given up hope. God says, I'm going to give you a son. Abraham gets impatient, takes matter into his own hands, has a son by Sarah, his wife's servant, Ishmael. But that's not the son that God promised. But God still blessed Ishmael. Ishmael became the father of a great nation. What's that nation called today? Arabia. Then he had the promised son was given to him, Isaac. Isaac had two sons. He had Esau and Jacob. Esau became the father of the nation of Edomites. Jacob became the father of the Israelites. Y'all, in just three generations' time, nations of people grew out of a barren old man. That's what God's promises can do. They can multiply exponentially. All right, so let's talk about these 12 brothers. I get real excited about the history stuff on this, so I'm going to calm down just a little bit. Yes, I still need more coffee. So most of you have probably heard about Joseph and his coat of many colors, or Joseph and the Technicolor dream coat. Yeah. So we pick up in Genesis 37, verses 3 and 4. It says, Israel, or Jacob, because remember, he wrestled with God, and then God changed his name to Israel. We talked about that last week. Israel loved Joseph more than any of his other sons because he had been born to him in his old age, and he made him an ornate robe. When his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, they hated him and could not speak a kind word to him. See, there's a lot going on here that's easy for us to miss. Because we might read this and be like, oh, this is a story about Joseph and his daddy, and Joseph's dad really loved him, and so he wanted to do something really special for him. And his brothers are just awful people because they're so jealous. Like, why would they be so jealous just because he's the favorite? But look at it with a little bit more historical context here. So Joseph was the youngest at this time, because number 12, Benjamin hadn't been born yet. He's the youngest of 11 brothers. He has 10 brothers that are before him in the family line. It's not just about being daddy's favorite. See, Jacob was basically making Joseph his chosen heir by giving him that coat. Because it says that it was a full-length cloak. It wasn't just like a jacket or a robe, bathrobe or something like that. It was a cloak like royalty would wear. He was raising him up in status in his family. See, at this time, Joseph, he's just a 17-year-old punk. Like, he's daddy's favorite. He's his mom's only son. So he probably gets doted on all the time. And he probably has a little bit of an ego because of that. And we can tell this because, see, he had a couple dreams. And in these dreams, it could be interpreted that all of his brothers and even his mother and his father were bowing down before him. It says, and they hated him all the more because of his dream and what he had said. See, he didn't just have the dreams. He thought it would be a good idea to tell them about it. And I'm guessing he probably wasn't the most humble when he walked up to them and told them about his dreams. Maybe a little nanny, nanny, boo-boo, you're going to bow before me kind of thing. See, Jacob had to be picking up on some animosity between his sons, but he didn't do anything about it. See, in fact, he made things worse because he gave him the coat, but then he also kept Joseph at home with him and sent the other sons out to do the hard manual labor, the work, the shepherding. He made them go sit out in the fields with the sheep and kept Joseph at home. See, Joseph isn't just like sitting around the house, like playing video games or watching Doctor Who reruns. Like, he was being trained to be the manager of Jacob's estate. He would occasionally be sent out by his father to go check up on his older brothers. And there's reports in here of when he maybe tattled on his brothers a little bit to daddy when he was doing this. Everything he did and everything his father, Jacob, did was setting him up to be despised by his brothers. So this is what's happening in verse 17. It says, so Joseph went after his brothers and found them near Dothan. But when they saw him in the distance before he reached them, they plotted to kill him. Here comes that dreamer, they said to each other. Come now, let's kill him and throw him into one of these cisterns and say that a ferocious animal devoured him. Then we'll see what comes of his dreams. But Reuben, the oldest brother, he convinced them not to kill him. Just toss him in the ditch. Like, we'll figure out what to do with him in a little bit, but don't kill him. So he came, and they did that. They stripped off the robe, tossed him in the cistern. And then they sat down to eat lunch. While they're eating lunch, they look up and they see a caravan passing by. And they decided, we'll just sell him as a slave. Might as well get some money from him. And then they covered up their crime by ripping the coat, slaughtering a goat, and splattering its blood on the coat, making it look like he had been attacked by an animal. And Jacob was convinced that his beloved son was dead. This is some serious sibling rivalry. See, this family had lots of obvious issues that were a result of the selfish and often thoughtless way that the patriarchs acted on their own behalf. It started with Abraham and Sarah taking matters into their own hands. It started with the way Sarah treated Hagar, her servant. And it continued through the generations. See, we talked last week about the rivalry between Jacob and Esau, how Jacob was not the favorite of his father, Isaac. And out of selfish jealousy, he tricked and manipulated his way into getting Esau's birthright and blessing. And because of that, he spent years hiding in exile from his brother's wrath. You would think that this personal experience might have served as a little bit of a warning for Jacob to be careful about playing favorites, but it didn't. See, instead of just choosing one son over another like his father had done, he chose one son over 10 others. Jacob was at fault for Joseph being sold into slavery as much as anyone else. Yet God still used this situation to serve his purpose. So we're going to skip ahead just a little bit in Joseph's story. There's so much to Joseph's story. There's so much history here. But basically, after arriving in Egypt, he was sold to a man named Potiphar. Potiphar was a powerful man. He got into some trouble in his new household or family unit that he was living in, and he was sent to prison. And this time in prison humbled him, and it prepared him for the purpose that God had for him. See, he was released from prison years later when he was taken to Pharaoh to interpret Pharaoh's dreams. Isn't this interesting that it was his dreams that got him into trouble when he was focusing on his dreams? But then it was when he was trying to understand someone else's dreams that he got out of trouble? Little side note. So now Joseph is raised up in Egypt in a position that is only slightly less powerful than Pharaoh himself. So he goes from the favorite in his family household to a ditch, to slavery, to being a pretty well-liked servant in Potiphar's house, to prison, to being Pharaoh's second in command. This is pretty crazy stuff. But see, the reason he was put in charge is because he interpreted Pharaoh's dreams that said that there was going to be 7 years of plenty and then 7 years of drought. So he was put in charge of making sure that the storehouses were full during the 7 years of plenty so they could survive the 7 years of drought. So during the drought, Egypt was in a good position because God had prepared them for what was to come. And they listened and they acted. But all the surrounding areas, they were starving. There was no food. So people started flooding into Egypt to buy food so their families could survive. His 10 brothers also came to Egypt to buy food so their families could survive. And when they did, it just so happened to be Joseph that they were sent to. In Genesis 42, it says, "Now Joseph was the governor of the land, the person who sold grain to all of its people. So when Joseph's brothers arrived, they bowed down to him with their faces to the ground. As soon as Joseph saw his brothers, he recognized them, but he pretended to be a stranger and spoke harshly to them. 'Where do you come from?' he asked. 'From the land of Canaan,' they replied, 'to buy food.' Although Joseph recognized his brothers, they did not recognize him. Then he remembered his dreams about them." So during his interrogation with them, Joseph discovered that his father was still alive and that his mother Rachel had given birth to another son named Benjamin. And he remembered the dreams that had gotten him into trouble when he saw his brothers bowing before him. He saw his dreams happening in real life. Now, he could have told them who he was in that moment and punished them for what they had done. But see, they were his connection to his father and his younger brother. And they were family. And maybe there was a bigger purpose happening here. So this is just me sharing my thoughts on this. So don't quote this as fact. Okay, this is just Carrie's dialogue. But I think that Joseph had a little bit of a change of heart, because the Joseph that they threw into the ditch, I'm not sure if he would have treated them quite the same way in that moment. See, two times he had been cast away by the family or the household that he was in. Two times. The first time, none of his brothers spoke up for him when it was suggested that they get rid of him. None of them. Now, Reuben said, "Let's not kill him." But he didn't say, "No, this is a bad idea. Leave him alone." None of his fellow servants spoke up for him when he was falsely accused in Potiphar's house. And it's certain that they would have seen or heard something, that they knew the truth, because Potiphar's wife, she would not have been left alone. She would have always had someone attending her. But no one spoke up for him because he alienated himself from them. His pride separated them. See, that kind of rejection from your own people, it's got to mess with your psyche. It's got to make you think, what's going on? And those years in prison, he had lots of time to think about it. Maybe it was because of the way his father Jacob had shown him favoritism, but Joseph had a habit of placing himself in a higher position of importance than the people around him. If you read about his exchange with Potiphar's wife, he even said basically, like, I am even higher in this household than you. Sitting in prison for a few years gave him a chance to think about this and give him a change of heart. See, the situations that Joseph found himself in were the obvious consequences of someone who had cut himself off from his communities. But see, this is not just a story about Joseph. Redemption, it's a family matter in this story. The next few chapters, it tells a story about how Joseph basically forced his brothers to bring Benjamin back to Egypt so he could see him. He kept He kept one of the brothers and in prison until they came back to make sure that they came back and brought Benjamin. See, he did not need this family that had thrown him away. He could have moved on without them. But see, he knew that they needed him. They were going to starve unless he provided them food. And eventually, when they brought Benjamin back, he invited them to a really awkward dinner. Do you guys have any awkward family dinners this week? You don't have to admit that. You see, after the dinner, Joseph had his servants put his own silver cup into Benjamin's bag. That seems kind of weird, doesn't it? That, like, he planted silver in all of their bags to make it look like they had, like, taken the money. But then he put the cup. Now, this cup would have been priceless. It would have been a mark of his position. So putting this cup into Benjamin's bag is framing him as a thief. See, once again, there's more going on here than the service reading will tell you. See, Joseph is testing his 10 older brothers. See, they had hated him because he was their father's favorite. They faked his death and they sold him into slavery into Egypt. But see, now his father had a new favorite son in his place. He was giving them the option to leave Benjamin to the same fate that they had left him with. He needed to know that they had changed too. Would they protect their brother, or would they abandon him also? And then Judah speaks up. Your servant, my father, said to us, you know that my wife bore me 2 sons. One of them went away from me, and I said, he has surely been torn to pieces, and I have not seen him since. If you take this one from me too, and harm comes to him, you will bring my gray head down to the grave in misery. So now, if the boy is not with us when I go back to your servant, my father, and if my father, whose life is closely bound up with the boy's life, sees that the boy isn't there, he will die. Your servants will bring the gray head of our father down to the grave in sorrow. Your servant guaranteed the boy's safety to my father. I said, if I do not bring him back to you, I will bear the blame before you, my father, all my life. Now then, please let your servant remain here as my Lord's slave in place of the boy, and let the boy return with his brothers. How can I go back to my father if the boy is not with me? No, do not let me see the misery that would come on my father. Judah offered himself as a sacrifice in place of his brother. Now remember that statement, because it's going to come up again next week. See, that was all that Joseph needed to hear to finally reveal who he was to his brothers. His brother was willing to stay in place. He was willing to sacrifice his life for the life of his father's favorite. After years of division and brokenness, their family was restored. This story is not about Joseph overcoming obstacles and making himself great. It's about family healing. So Joseph settled his father and his brothers in Egypt, and he gave them property in the best part of the land, the district of Ramses, and as Pharaoh directed. Joseph also provided his father and his brothers and all his father's household with food according to the number of their children. Y'all, that was a big number. Like, there's a breakdown in here of, like, how many people came to Egypt as part of their family. Good grief. Like, big family unit. Need a lot of paper plates for that meal. The family of Abraham was protected and provided for during a time of famine because they were open to reconciliation and forgiveness. See, this story is not just about Joseph. It's not even just about Joseph's immediate family. It's showing how God preserved the line of Abraham so that Jesus could come from it. You know, we all know what it means to be thankful. I mean, if you didn't pick up on any thankful words and stuff this past week, then you live in a hole. But see, like Matt talked last week about being grateful, and he talked about the difference in being thankful and grateful, that grateful or showing gratitude, it's a habit, it's a choice, it's something that can be practiced, it's something inside of you that you can hang on to despite what's going on around you. It comes from a place of inward hope and appreciation. However, thankfulness is more of a feeling, more of a reaction to a circumstance. See, when you're thankful, you can be pleased or relieved, and it inspires you to express gratitude. You can be thankful that a long week is over. You can be thankful that you finally finished a big project. You can be thankful to get a good report on a medical diagnosis. But there's nothing quite like the warmth that comes from being accepted and loved to make you feel thankful. You know, like when you've had a rough time, you've had a rough week, or you might be feeling a little bit rough that day, and someone that you love gives you a big hug, and just takes a minute to be with you. It makes you thankful. Y'all, relationships are hard. Family's hard. People are hard. No matter if it's family by blood or family by choice, we all mess up. We all choose ourselves and our desires over others at times. But how often do we stop and think, like, am I choosing my interest and desires over my relationship with God? See, when all is forgiven and the relationship is reconciled, you can't help but feel overwhelmed with thankfulness. I would highly encourage you to read the scriptures about Joseph and his reactions to seeing his brothers and talking to his brothers. Multiple times he had to leave the room in tears because he was overcome. He was overwhelmed with the emotion of thankfulness. The whole point of the past few weeks' messages has been to show how the family of God the family that God designed for Jesus to come from, how they began. The entire biblical story points to Jesus from Genesis to Revelation. And all of Genesis, it shows how God's plan for universal reconciliation with humanity began with a bunch of messed up people. They made a lot of mistakes. They were terrible at maintaining good relationships, even with family, maybe especially with family. And God had to clean up a lot of messes that they created. But if they had been perfect, if they had gotten it right, then we wouldn't have needed Jesus to come as the perfect Savior. We're going to do another song. And during this song, I want you guys to take this as an opportunity, a chance to reflect on your relationships. Ask yourself, are there relationships in your life that need to be reconciled? Now, true reconciliation, it requires that both sides are working together to restore the relationship. If you can bring yourself to a point of being willing, but maybe they're not, then begin to pray that they will experience a change of heart. But in the meantime, you have to let go of whatever it is that you're holding on to that created the division. You got to forgive. Even if they're not ready to receive it, you've got to let it go, because you'll be better off for it. I want you to also take time to think, have you reconciled your relationship with God? Once again, true reconciliation, it requires that both sides work together. See, God's done his part. He sent Jesus. But you have to do your part too. He's inviting you to be part of his reconciled family. You just have to accept his love and forgiveness. So I want you guys to take this time. Think about your relationship with God and with others. Sometimes that means that you have to humble yourself. Sometimes you have to offer forgiveness. Sometimes you just have to be willing to accept the forgiveness. Sometimes you have to forgive yourself. But embrace that feeling of thankfulness for the opportunity for restored relationships. See, we haven't just been talking about this stuff the past few weeks because I'm a history nerd and I get excited about it, and I like to look at family trees and see how things were designed and where people came from. No, I wanted to take a real look at these men. These men that have been raised onto pedestals over the past few thousand years. Yes, they were men of God, but they were imperfect. They were worthy of his love, but they were not able to be Jesus. They couldn't do it. No human can do it. It took Jesus, who is both God and man, to be sent, to humble himself, to forgive, and to surrender his life for his brothers. To not look to his own interest, to not think about what was in it for him. It took that divine part of his being to cancel out the unworthy humanity. So as we sing the song, think about your relationships with people. Think about your relationship with God. Gosh, think about your relationship with yourself. What do you say to yourself? How do you talk to yourself? Are you kind to yourself? And think about the fact that out of thousands and thousands of years and this huge line of genealogy of just this one family, not one person was worthy until Jesus came and was willing. So if you want to sit and pray, if you want someone to pray with you, if you want to just stand and worship, use this opportunity as a time to just set aside all of the thoughts, all of the worry, all of the holiday hustle, and just focus on your relationship with God and His family.